Okay, I see sheets are being handed out. Okay, this is our penultimate shiur, right? This is the second to last shiur for, I think, next week is supposed to be the last. Until we meet again, as they say. So, even though there's much more to say about Harsha, all these topics are just very, very major topics, as you can see. Again, all year we've been studying, a small section in Masechet Shavuos Eidos. We've gone through most of the Perek, but what makes it a very unique Perek is that through the lens of this very, relatively small topic, as we've seen one pasuk in Chumash, basically the whole thing. It's the applications really test and illuminate some of the primary concepts of din and edus and other things. So last week we spent some time in Harsha, and we pretty much tried to develop that there is this range of views. In terms of what Harsha is, the range goes from the Balamor, who thinks that at least la halacha Harsha is just a form of shlichus, shlichus shonim kemoso. There's nothing atypical about it, and the biggest chiddush of the Balamor is that after the whole Shaklavatarya in Bava Kamma and the difficulties in Shavuos, that we're back to where we if we had no information, we probably would have anticipated, like, what's the problem? Shluchos Shalom Kamosa. So that's fascinating. It's fascinating that the Balamor brought us back to that despite everything else. But then, of course, on the other extreme, the view of the Rajba, who was convinced that Harsha is as distant as it could be from Shlichos, from Shluchos Shalom Kamosa, and that even if there's a machlokas in the Gemara, 2 days in the Hardai, and Shaklavatarya of Ravashi, and Abaya, and this and that, and the Gemara Bava Kamma, that everybody has, the Rajba, it's fascinating, there are certain lines in the Rajba, that where he basically says, don't think that that's gufa, the argument between Ravashi and Abaya. It's not. Everybody agrees, some of the other deus in the Gemara. Everybody's of the opinion that this is a form of haknah, and the only question is, which haknah? And again, based on his very strong conviction, understanding this particular sugya, as we explained, he came up with a new doctrine of haknah, the idea that there are two types of haknahs, are two paradigms of haknah, one for hedyot and one for hekdesh. That's really the biggest chiddush of the Rajba. That when the Gemara says Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gezov lo nesiyashu abaylim zev zeh inim yicholim lagdisho zelafi shene shalos zelafi shene birshuso, almost all of the Rishonim across the board are of the opinion that Rabbi Yochanan, the big chiddush in Rabbi Yochanan is Rabbi Yochanan basically said you can be an owner of an object or an animal, whatever it is, you can be an owner and your ownership rights can be restricted, can be curtailed, right? Because even though you are the formal owner, you're the titular owner, your inability to control this object, right, limits your transactional, capability with this object. And that's the chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan, the din of zelafi shene shalom. That's obvious. You may not be obvious to certain crooks, but to most people, it's obvious that you cannot sell what you do not own. Again, in the history of crime, people have done this, continuously. And I guess I don't want to say that in the history or, of economics, they're always trying to create mechanisms where you can do that, but they are in a certain way, but legal mechanisms.
Probably a legal mechanism that the ganav can be mishanet.
Yeah, that's also true. But that's why it's so ripe, in other words, for the pickings in some cases, because it's always on the borderline. If a sophisticated thief doesn't have to sell something that he doesn't own in a crude way.
Uh-huh.
What?
That thief was a
Talmud. Yeah, exactly. So, That isn't what I was referring to, but right. So it's basically the typical view, the standard view of the Rishonim, is that the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan, which we Paskin like, is that that a person who doesn't have control over an object also cannot transact it, and that there's no difference between Hekdesh and Mecher or Matana. I can't give it to Hekdesh, and I can't sell it, and I can't give it as a gift, and so on. And therefore, the first day of Nahardai, I can't give it away as a Harsha either. The Chiddush of the Rajba, and it's all because, and I'm saying it boggles the mind, it's all because of his understanding of these Gemaras that, you know, that pushed him into these conclusions, is that really the Din of Rabbi Yochanan is a very specialized halacha that applies only to certain types of transactions, and that it does not apply to the most common transactions, which are mechar matan. I mean, most people are not involved in giving things to Hekdesh, and they're mostly not involved in pidyon meiser sheni, or in hefker. I mean, that can happen, but mostly, most transactions, 90% of transactions, 80%, I don't know the number, depends on the society, are, mechers and matanas, you know. So the idea that Rabbi Yochanan's halacha, which specifically, you know, targets Hekdesh, and where the mokar, the source, is Hekdesh, the idea that it's limited to Hekdesh, you know, is just quite, works in, but no one ever thought of it until the Rajba articulated it the way that he did. The idea that Hekdesh requires more rather than less, as we discussed, is a Chiddush. So that's, a double Chiddush. Because normally we think that it requires less, as reflected by Amiras on the Gavoa, Kimisiras on the Hedyo, which the Rajba, of course, does not deny. He's just going to argue that there are two different ideas here. Namely, one is, what level of control do you require in order to transact? You know, and as far as that is concerned, you require greater control to be Makdish than to be Mocher. And then the other question is, if you have that level of control, and therefore you are, able or capable of transacting to Hekdesh, right? What is the mechanism or the mode, that will accomplish that transfer? And as far as that is concerned, there's a kula in Hekdesh, Amirasa Legavoa, Kimisirasa Lahedja, that pronouncing Hekdesh's sovereignty over an object makes it so. Kalhecha di Isa, Begaza, Dirachmana, Isa becomes the property. Or maybe to invoke, as we've discussed in the past, Yerushalmi, which says, Lashem Haaretz, Im Umaloa. Yerushalmi doesn't say that. The Pasuk says that. Lashem Haaretz Umaloa. But the Yerushalmi says that that's why, it's so easy, to create konem, to create a neder. What the Yerushalmi profoundly means is, the Ribbono Shel Olam created everything, and he owns everything. And, he's been very generous with us, transferring, that ownership, to mankind. But in the end of the day, that first layer of his ownership, the idea that all things, belong to the Creator, is still a reality even after the gift. And you can invoke that, by a neder, or by koneim, by all these things. So partially that's the idea of amirasa legavoa kimsirasa lehedjo. It's easy, as long as you have the right level of control, to make the transfer. But that's why the Rajba doesn't even address this question. I'm speaking for him. Hopefully I'm speaking accurately for him. What I'm really trying to describe is that the Rajba was exercising his full creative powers, and in order just to explain this sugya really, really well, this is what I meant last week, which I didn't have a chance to elaborate so much. These are the ripple effects. In other words, if this is a real pshat in the sugya, and other things as well are true, namely, a Mursha you know, cannot take place unless a hekdesh could take place, and hekdesh is not the same as mecher. So then you have to reassess the concept of ownership, you know, the role of hekdesh in ownership, and so on. So there are like four or five halachos that require this higher, you know, standard of ownership, hefker and, you know, pidyon and the gonev minaganov, the gunav mi beis ha'ish v'lo gonev minaganov. There are certain halachos which require not only shelo but birshuso as well. But mecher and matana, right, the most ubiquitous transactions are actually end up being outside of all that. So it's just a very remarkable, there are kulas and chumras in this Rashba, but there's a whole world that gets recast as a result of his understanding of this topic. And when we consider, with all of that, that this was to go against, you know, the convenience, that was a pressure on all the Rishonim in this topic. Namely, how do you collect long, you know, distant loans? So the answer of Rishonim differs, but pretty much outside of the Rashba, they all sanctioned it, they all justified it in one way or another. The Gaonim, quoted by the Rambam in Hilchos Shluchim that we read last week, the Gaonim made a special takana, right? Shaloi hei kol echad, you know, holech, you know, limedina sayam. People shouldn't, you know, run away to avoid paying their debts, which is based on the Gemara in Ksuvas Daf Pei Zayin, the comment of Shmuel about Porea Chovo Shalom Bifnei Baldin. But the Gaonim expanded that. They made a special takana. Also, that you could write a harsha on milva, even though not Torah, it shouldn't work, because a harsha cannot be written on something which cannot be, you know, given away. So, but at the end of the day, they believe in this takana. Rashba strikes down the takana, right? According to the Balamor, whose position we saw, Shlofashodim Kimoso, so even though you can't transact a chov, you can send somebody to collect it, because Shlofashodim Kimoso. The Rashba, now, most of the Rishonim are not having any of that. They just don't think that Harsha is at all under the rubric of Shulchan Shalom Kamoso. The Bali Tosis came up with the idea that the 2 days of Nahardai are actually arguing. One day of Nahardai thinks that Harsha is a form of Hakna. The other day of Nahardai thinks that Harsha is a form of Shlichas. Not Shulchan Shalom Kamoso, because then we'd still be left high and dry when it came to the din of Mipia Toveya, which is our sugya, and the din of the right of the mal of the, let's say, lova or the shomer to say la bal dvarim didia. So this isn't a typical shlichus. We'll call it a more independent shlichus, an expansive shlichus, whatever the case may be. So the Bali Tosa said, listen, there are 2 days of Nardoi, you pass them like the second one. And we're not even worried about Mechseka Shikra. So that's the reason why you can collect Chovos, you know, with a Harsha. And then the Ramban, earlier the Ravid, came up with even a more fascinating, again, they too were pulled in all sorts of different directions to explain the Sugya and to explain how it fit into, you know, the bigger picture of Choshen Mishpat. They came up with the idea that you can have a quasi, you know, something in between Shlichus and Kenya. Either a kind of schizophrenic, you know, two tracks vis-a-vis, you know, the Lova, you know, I'm a, the Mursha is Kona, and vis-a-vis the Marsha, meaning the person who appointed him, he's only a Shliach. Or, more likely, certainly the way I understand the Ravid and the Ramban, is that there's a kind of a Kinyan Le'inyan Koach Gvia. And then I think they're casting about for models of this, Dovr Shlo Bali Olam, K'niyam Manas L'Haknos, things of that sort, where you have this kind of in-between status where I'm not selling you or transacting, I'm not giving you the value, I'm giving you a right which is associated with being a title holder. So you're a title holder vis-a-vis the claim, or vis-a-vis the capacity to collect, but you're not a title holder vis-a-vis the object to keep. Now, that's a very subtle legal idea. Another Rishonim might simply say there's no such thing. And they might also reject Kniya Manas Aknus Dover Shalom. They might say those things don't work that way either. Or even if they do, they work that way for a particular reason. But this certainly doesn't work that way. But again, this was, you really see how in struggling with three things, evidence of the sugyas, which they took with the utmost of seriousness, the concepts and the integrity of the concepts as they apply, you know, across the board, you know, in the totality of Shas, you know, we can call it in the holistic system, basically. And thirdly, in this particular case, because it's, you could say, exacerbated by or highlighted by the, you know, the practical problem, which obviously was a big issue too, namely, you know, is there any justification for this practice that people engage in, which would be, ideally, you know, a constructive practice in the community, in the Jewish community, namely that efficient debt collection is good for everybody. Shalotinol, I think you asked me about that last week, Shalotinol delos b'fnei lovin. It's not, you know, it's not a question of siding with, you know, powerful creditors against weaker debtors or vice versa. The real issue is that an inefficient system, right, redounds to the detriment of everyone. Right, that's certainly true in all financial models. I think you have to be able to have confidence. You know, in if you don't have confidence in collection, then you're not going to extend loans. That's what Lotinol Dalos Bifnei Lavin is. It's not, you know, good for one. It's not one lobby or the other lobby. It's, you know, what's good for, you know, for the economy, or what's good for the community in a bigger way. So Ramban came up with his idea. But the Rajba, you know, didn't like any of these. And then the Rajba was even able to say Yikav Adin HaSahar, namely, you know what, as it would be great if this worked. It would help us in solving this issue, you know, which needs solutions. But, you know, in the end of the day, Yikav Adin HaSahar, you know, if the sugya doesn't allow for it, and the svaras, the concepts don't allow for it, then as much as you would want it to work, you have to have the courage of your conviction. All the Rishonim had the courage of their conviction. That doesn't mean they didn't examine things, and especially things that would be constructive, didn't force them to be creative or to reassess or to try to, to look at things from a different angle. But you have to have the integrity in the end of the day, and all Rishonim did in different issues, you know, to be able to walk away from something and say, you know, it really doesn't work. If you don't have that, then all your creativity, you know, to justify things in other contexts, you know, comes under question. So these are just very important, you know, there's the issues, the narrow issues, and, you know, the broader issues and the meta issues, and this is just a great example of it. There are many examples of it. But yeah, there was a question?
Yeah, I'm kind of perplexed with the kind of the loga to say la bal burn piat. To me, it would seem to be that's kind of a way simply to get out of a claim. But that fundamentally, why does a loga have a right?
It's a good question. There's no makar for it. It's just, as far as I know, this idea is expressed only in the Gemara Bava Kamma that we read, Daf Ayin, to explain why we need a Mursha, and, you know, it's not enough to have, you know, Shlucho Shel Adam Kemoso. There's no makar that's given that says, you know, how do we know that somebody can say La Apal Dvar Miniyat? So what that means is that it's assumed, you know, to be like an inalienable, I guess, kind of a right. It is interesting. I mean, there is another sugya, and that is the Gemara in Bava Kamma Daf Kuf Dalid, which is worth looking at. We're not going to do it now. I should mention that, you know, I keep mentioning, or I mentioned at least a couple of times, I wouldn't say I keep mentioning, but that, you know, the our sugya here in Shavuot, as I said, is the second most important harsha'a sugya in Shas. The first one being Bava Kamma Daf Ayin. But there's a third sugya, which is very important to harsha'a, and that's a sugya Bava Kamma Daf Kuf Dalid, where the Gemara talks about Shliach Be'edim. There the Gemara does speak a little bit about, kind of the skirts around the issue of La Bal Dvarim Didiyat, and talks about it in terms of like an insurance factor. In other words, what happens if I give you the object that you're collecting, you know, for your mishaleach, and something happens along the way, right? Who's liable, you know, under those circumstances, you know, for the loss, right? So, but it does seem, if you look at, and by the way, in that Gemara, in Daf Kuf Dalet, Shliach Be'edim, and so on, there's a Balamor, which is consistent with the Balamor here, and he refers in both places to it, and the Ravid, and the Ramban. The Balamor, Ravid, and Ramban there make references to their perspectives in Bava Kamma, Daf Ayin, in the broader topic. So that's something that needs to be integrated into this as well. So there, as I say, is an insurance aspect, meaning what will happen, you know, if you get hit by lightning and gone your way back to the Mishaleach, am I going to have to, how do I know that I don't have to pay again? It does seem, according to most Rishonim, from that sugya, that even without a harsha, right, it's easy, you know, to figure out a solution to that problem. Now, once that is true, so then your question looms larger. In other words, you could have said that the comment, La Bal Dvarim Didiyat, is connected to some even distant, you know, contingency, right, in which, you know, I'm really going to end up suffering, you know, me, the Lova, I'm going to end up suffering by giving you this object. Because maybe in 80% of the cases, or 90%, it's going to be fine. You know, in those rare cases where there's going to be a certain kind of a problem, you know, he's going to come back to me, you know, because of it, or we're not going to be able to prove, you know, that I gave it to him, or whatever the case may be. And as long as there's something even distant along that, you know, along those lines, then saying La Bal Dvarim Didiyat in all cases is very, very reasonable for substantive reasons. If you learn the sugya in Kuf Dalet that there's like airtight way of eliminating, you know, that problem. So then all that remains is La Bal Dvarim Didiyat as a kind of inalienable right to say, you know what, you're not the guy who gave me the loan, and therefore I don't feel obligated to give it back, you know, in your possession, even if he authorized you, you know, as a shliach. And that's where Mursha, you know, comes into play. I don't want to deal with his appendage. I want to deal with him. He lent me the money. I want to be able to look him in the eye and give it back to him. But it's more of a right than it is a, you know, kind of a consideration, which if you interpret the Gemara in Kuf Dalet differently, might not be the case. So that needs to be integrated into the discussion. Anyway, there's another view, and that is the view of the Ravan, quoted by the Mordechai here, and also the Tosfos Rid. The Tosfos Rid, I should mention, in a bunch of places, Bava Kamma Daf Ayin, and the Tosfos Rid wrote a book called Sefer HaMachria, which is, you know, everything Tosfos Rid writes is fascinating. You know, he was from Italy, you know. I'm not saying that everybody from Italy is fascinating, but we don't have a lot of the, you know, the Rishonim from that Kufa, from that period in Italy. And therefore, he's just different, you know. So it's also hard to know how much of it is, you know, Italy and how much of it is just a Tosfos Rid. He was a very fertile thinker, as we've mentioned many times. If you read the Tosfos Rids, it's like, you know, as I wrote in my, you know, Madura Tlisa, my third, you know, stab at this topic, but then I was Chozer in my eighth. You know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but,
when,
you know.
When did he live?
You know, 13th, 14th century of Italy. But he was, number one, what I'm trying to say is, it's a different halachic culture. He's not a typical Bali Tosis, and of course he's certainly not part of the, you know, the Spain world or the Provence world. So again, it would be helpful to know what was going on around him, you know, to assess, you know, some of his innovations. But clearly, just the amount of and the range of his changes of heart, you know, and his many of his radical views are such that he obviously just personally was a very creative person. So anyways, he wrote this book called Sefer Machriya, which is different topics. We also have Tshuvas Harid, and then we have the Tosas Harid and the Piskei Harid. So he writes about Harsha in all these places, in Sefer Machriya and so on. And he too seems to take kind of the middle Ramban type view with some differences, that there is something, you know, there's something in between Shlichus and Hakna, not something that is, you know, schizophrenic, you know, or this to him and that to the other fellow, but again, this kind of middle position of having, you know, acquired the rights of Tviya, the rights of Gviya, but not so much the object itself per se. And that's a fascinating area to look into. The Ravan, also quoted in the Mordechai in Bava Kamma Daf Ayin, but the Ravan, on his Perush in Bava Kamma Daf Ayin, has a very lengthy and very innovative discussion. And then he also has a tshuva in the Sefer Ravan on this topic, where he elaborates even further. It just, you know, goes to show, as I say, this was an extremely practical and also just intellectually stimulating, you know, topic, both. And therefore, everybody wrote about it. Everybody wrote very, very extensively about it. Everybody was very passionate about it. And therefore, there are, like, you know, there's, you know, Ein Beis Medrash Belo Chiddush when it comes to this topic. And there's much, much more. So the Ravan, in his discussion, thinks that the 2 days of Nahardai are both within the worldview of Shlichus, but it seems like the two deos are about how independent, you know, how far the independence of Shlichus is. In other words, just to make it clear, the Balamor ends up saying that according to Ravashi, a Mursha is a Shliach, and he's a typical Shliach, Shlichus Shodim Kamos. End of story. The Bali Tosis, as we already saw, were of the opinion that the first day of Nahardai thought that Harsha is a Kenyan, and it wouldn't work in a Chov, for example, and therefore they compare it to Rabbi Yochanan. The second day of Nahardai thinks that Mursha is a Shliach, but not Shluchos Shorim Kamoso, an independent Shliach who has been invigorated by the language of Zil Don Apik Lenafshech, and by virtue of the fact, as reflected in the fact, and also caused by the fact, that he is immune to the claim of Labal Dvarim Didiyah, so he's more of a Barachi. And therefore it's considered, for Shavuos Eidus purposes, Mipia Toveya, you know, and so on. So according to Tosis, right, either we're talking about a super Shliach or a Kinyan. The Rajba, as we said, thought that both days were about Kinyan, and the question is, the Kinyan that you require for Hekdesh or the Kinyan that you require Karagil? The Rambam was of the opinion also that Harsha is a kind of super Shlichus. Just the super Shlichus that the Rambam speaks about wouldn't work in a Chov either, because to be a super Shliach, you have to have the ability to be Kona and to be Makna. Even though Harsha isn't Kinyan and Hakna, the capacity for Kinyan and Hakna is a prerequisite for super Shlichus. And therefore the Rambam holds that you really can't be Gove fundamentally a Chov Ayde Harsha. That's what the Rajba invokes. He says, I'm just holding like the Rambam. The only thing is that the Rambam then quotes the Gaonim, who said, but the Gaonim made a Takana that you could. And the Rajba says, I don't think that Takana is binding. So then there ends up being a Machlokas Lamaisa. But either way, that's the Rambam. The reason I'm telling you this is, the Ravan thinks both deos of Nahardai, it's almost like a parallel to the Rajba, but both deos are within Shlichus, but the two deos are, how far do you push super Shlichus? That's the issue. Says the Ravan, again, he doesn't say super, these are my language, but this is, I think, what's going on. L'may nafkamina, l'may nafkamina, the nafkamina might be, what happens when the Marsha dies? Does the Harsha outlive the Marsha? Okay? So again, if Harsha is Hakna, then very likely the answer is yes. But typically, when we say that Harsha is Shlichus, one of the limitations that we are intending to convey is that, you know, that even if it isn't Shlichus Shonim Kemoso, one would still pretty much assume that it doesn't outlive the Mishaleach. Right? That's where the Ravan differs. The Ravan says it's very possible that the Shlichus of Harsha lives on after the Marsha is no longer alive. Which is fascinating. Now, he does think that the Marsha can fire the Mursha. That's another interesting question, right? Again, in Shlichus, typically you can fire the Shliach. Now, there is, again, one well-known example of a Shliach who cannot be fired, and that is the Rambam's famous and controversial view regarding Shlichus Betruma. The Rambam says that if you make a Shliach Letruma, then the only way you can fire him, this is the Rambam of Shluchim V'Shutfin, in Ilchus Trumos, the only way that you can fire him, says the Rambam, is if he violates the terms of his appointment. That is, if he behaves in a manner that diverts from the original appointment and charge, right, then he doesn't lose his shlichus, but then the mishaleach can fire him. Shlich l'truma. The Ravid in Ilchus Trumos says, I don't understand what the Rambam is talking about. Any mishaleach can fire any shliach whenever he wants, because shlich l'shonim is kamoso, atem gam atem, and we don't paskin that, you know, ein dibor mevatel dibor. We paskin that dibor is mevatel dibor, meaning, if I appoint you b'dibor, then I can fire you b'dibor. So I don't have to have grounds to fire a shliach, says the Ravid. And we don't find such a thing in any other area of halacha. Like if I send a shliach to Mekadesh Anisha, then I want to fire him, I can fire him. Even if I want to continue to, let's say I still want to marry the woman, you know, I can still fire the shliach, right? Because dibor is mevatel dibor. So typically, again, shlichos, aside from that Rambam, that might be because the Rambam may think that shlichos doesn't really require truma. I'm sorry, what did I just say? Truma doesn't require shlichos. And if you do appoint a shliach l'truma, so maybe it implies that you're empowering him, you know, in a more independent way. And therefore, the only way that you can fire him is if he veers, you know, from the terms of... That's how I understand the... the Rambam. Getting back to Harsha, there is an interesting discussion in the Poskim in Shulchan Aruch, wherever that is, I think it's Simon Kuf Chaf Gimel, Kuf Chaf Beis, Kuf Chaf Gimel, around there in Chosher Mishpat. There is interesting discussions about, you know, whether a Marsha, you know, can fire a Marsha. Most views are that they can. And a parallel to that is this discussion of the Ravan, what happens if the Marsha dies. Right, and again, you can be mechalik in either direction between these two questions, but they are parallel questions. The more independent the shliach is from the mishaleach, right, the more you may need grounds to fire him, and grounds that go back to the minui itself. In other words, and the more the possibility that he can, you know, continue even after the misas. So
what was it continued on the basis of what if it's shlichus?
So again, I think what he's saying is that he's saying it's not a typical shlichus. It's a shlichus which is more independent to begin with, as reflected by these two dinim, namely, a regular shliach you can say to him la'abal dvarim didiat, and the morsha you can't. A regular shliach, seemingly according to the Mishnah and Lamed Hayim and Aleph in Shavuos, right? He can't he can't be the bal tviya. Right, because it has to be, him himself. Shalach biad avdo is not considered mipia toveya. But this shliach, assuming that Mursha is a form of shlichas, right, you can't say to him, la'abal dvarim didiat, and he is qualified, you know, to be mipia toveya. So he is more independent. Maybe that signifies that he's more independent. I mean, it's an interesting question. Does that mean he's more independent or more dependent?
What does he have?
He has kind of a shame baldava, right? I mean, that's something like that.
Does it have to do with Nishtata Mishaleach, the sources discussion?
Say that again?
Nishtata.
Oh, so it's parallel to that. That's in regular Shulchan Shonim Kamos. What you're referring to is, I mean, the famous debate between the Tur and the Rambam. Right? What happens if you have a... you're memana shliach, and then the mishaleach, loses his capacity, his intellectual capacity, nishtata, right? So what happens then, right? Is do we say shulchan aruch kimoso, and we emphasize the kimoso, and right now the shliach can't function because the mishaleach is incompetent? Or does the fact that Bizman Aminui, when he appointed him, it was fine? So it's that kind of a question, 100%. The Ksos links that whole Tur Rambam argument to the question of, well, why? What would be so wrong about saying Shliach La'achar Misa? He connects them. Yeah. So it absolutely is a connection. Really, it's today is also the rush in Asar Yuchsin, in Kiddushin, about Goseis. Let's say you have, let's say the Mishaleach is a Goseis. If you think for some reason that Goseis cannot appoint a Shliach, which is a secondary argument, so does that, change the Minui that he already, that when he was a Bari, so that's 2 days in the rush also in Kiddush. But it's that kind of a question. In other words, how independent is the Shliach from the Mishaleach? The less he is an appendage, right, the more you've increased the likelihood, of his being able to survive, the misa of the Mishaleach, and maybe even, make it more difficult to fire him. So that's these are very interesting questions. So the Rabban said that is part of the discussion of Aharsha. The Aharsha may be something that exists Bachar Misa. On the other hand, he also considers the possibility that our two deos of Nahar Doi are two deos within the Rabbi Yochanan perspective. The first day of Nahar Doi, as we have it in our Gemara, is that you can't write a Harsha, right, where you can't be Makdish a Chefetz, and where can you not be Makdish a Chefetz? Right, where there's no Rishus. But there's a case where there's no physical Rishus, but there is legal Rishus. And that, seemingly, Rabbi Yochanan thinks works for Hekdesh, and therefore it would work for Harsha as well. And that is the case of Pikadon. Because of the din of Pikadon Kalecha de Isa, Bershusa, Demara, Isa. Meaning every Pikadon is an embassy. Every Shomer, he's working for you, not against you. And therefore the object, even though it's physically in his, it's a million miles away, in his barn, but for all intents and purposes, Pikadon Kalecha de Isa Brishusa de Mari. He's holding it for you, so that's not typically a problem of Rabbi Yochanan of Eina Brishusa. That's the consensus view of the Rishonim. Indeed, Tosas here, right in the beginning, Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, the first few comments, first few words of Tosas, the big one, Heichid lo kafri kasvinon. After the first few words, actually. First Tulsa says, Ayri Akhar Shakasam, Harsha, Kafar, fine. Well, Lamandomber Bimaruba, Fila lo Kafar, lo Kasvinan, meaning the din of Rabbi Yochanan, even if there's no Kfira, because you can't be Makdish, Mukmina Masnisa Dahacha, the Pikadon. So say that the Mishnah's talking about a Pikadon. The Taima, the lo Kasvinan, the Farshasam, Shim the Gezavel, and the Suasha Abailim, Shneim, Enechalim, Lahakdish. According to the first reason of Nahar Doi, you can't appoint a Mursha where you can't be Makdish a Chefetz, right? Ubikadon Yochal Akdish. But Ubikadon you can be Makdish. Kinemucha Chasam, Demaise Alola El, Lasiata Mehayu Mehodeina Gonu Fachargan, and Mishantashu Mekefal, Bikadon Mishale. The din is one of the things that they compare to the din of Rabbi Yochanan, as mentioned before, is Vigunav mi Beisa Ish, below mi Beisa Ganav. Meaning if B, right, a ganav stole from the money, stole the object from A, and then C, ganav number two, stole it from the possession of ganav number one, B, so there's no chiv kefel. Okay? Because it says, v'gunav mi beis ha'ish, v'lo mi beis ha'ganav.
No chiv kefel for C.
For C.
But B has to pay kefel.
Yeah, of course, he had to pay kefel because he took it from the Bailam's house. Okay. Yeah, talking about C's act of theft from B, he doesn't pay kefel. Now, who does he not pay kefel to, by the way? He doesn't pay kefel to B, or he doesn't pay it. But who would he pay it if he did pay it? To B or to A?
Who does he pay the keren to?
That's a good question too. So that's already discussion in the Yerushalmi and the Rishonim and Shidugubetzis there and the Poskim. That's a big, an interesting discussion, right? But in the end of the day, that's the halacha of Beguna Mibes Lishlo and Beis Hagana. Definitely no Keifa. And what if a Ganav stole from a Shomer? Does he pay a Keifa to the Bailin? As I break into a show, the Shomer's house, and I steal the object. I steal Reuven's object from Shimon's barn. What's it doing in Shimon's barn? It's a bikodon. Is there any question that there's a chiv, Karen and Kefal? Of course.
Yes, a big you.
That's how Beguna Mibesa Yishlom and Beis Hagana. That's what Tosis quoting. So Tosis says, you see from there, and from other Gemaras, you can be Makdish a bikodon, and if you steal a bikodon, you're chayiv Kefal. Why? Because Pikadon Kalechid Isa, Breshusa Demara Isa. Oh, why am I telling you all this? It's interesting thing, so. But why not? Why now? The Rabban says that's the 2 days of Nahardai. One day of Nahardai says, the typical din, this is how we paskin, right? That, you know, the din of Eino Birshuso, you know, it applies where there's legal Eino Birshuso. Meaning, it's physically and legally out of your control, like a Ghana for a Gaza. I mean, where there's a competitive or an antithetical, you know, force at work. However, you know, if it were complementary, you know, if it was a shomer who's working for me, that, you know, you can be makdish that, and therefore you can be marsha. And the other day of Nahardai, says the Rabban, is of the opinion that the din of Eino Birshuso applies even to a pikadon, even where there is just no physical control, or it's not physically in his domain. Now, it's more machmir than Rabbi Yochanan. And those are the 2 days of Nahardai regarding Harsha. Meaning, wow, Harsha is so chamur. First of all, that there's such a day even about Hekdesh is shocking, right, with all the evidence. Again, the Rajba thought that Mechira and Matana apply even in Gezel, Velonis, Yerusha, Bailam. You can be Mokar Venosin. Right? Against almost all Rishon. And then in the opposite extreme, you have the Ravan saying, you can't even be Makdish a Pikado. And you can't be Marsha a Pikado. Hmm. So that, there's a lot of very interesting other applications or other positions regarding Harsha, and it's very much a case study in the overlap of all these different issues. Yeah.
Okay. Going back to the Tosis read, he lived about the same time as Rashi.
No, later, later.
Later. Because I was always fascinated by the Rashi and Beitza. I think Dav Chavav, it refers to some Talmud Chacham that came from Romi, and he's a Baki B'chol Hashas.
Well, Rashi quotes the Aruch a lot. I think that's the Rashi quoted the Aruch. The Aruch was from
Long Rashi and Beit.
And that's the Aruch. Rashi quotes the Aruch. The Tosfos read is a couple hundred years later than that. Yeah. And Rashi is
Rashi's stolen something.
Rashi's 11th century.
That's what's shocking.
No, that's from Nosson. That's the Nosson Bal Ha'Aruch, who Rashi quotes quite often. But Tosis Rid is quotes Rashi and argues with Rashi all the time, and they just said it's a very okay. So now let's turn our attention to let's go to the next topic. Again, there's much more to say about this topic, but let's move on to the next. Let's discuss the Gemara here on Lamed Dalid Amud Aleph. So the Gemara has a very we've discussed mostly about Knas and this, the Gemara back and forth. Let us discuss Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Everybody's trying to figure out, we've filled in these middle things one way or another. Everybody's trying to figure out, how do we know? It goes back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mashbi ani aleichem. The Mishnah, Lama Gimel Amdei, said, Mashbi ani aleichem lo tavoy v'ta'idu. Shani Cohen, Shani Levi, Shani Ben Grusha, Shani Ben Chutza, right? Potter. Meaning, you need a Tvias Mamo. Right? If the Din Torah revolves around personal status, and not around a content of Chosha Mishpat, then there's no Shor Seidus. Right? And as we noted, even though there are some financial consequences to personal status, right? But they're bakifin, they're a little more oblique, and they're not, you know, and they're not direct. And therefore, it doesn't qualify, even knossos, where the economic consequences are even more obvious and upfront and direct. But as we saw, if it's not designated mammon, at least according to most Rishonim, Rambam aside, it's not Shvua Seidus, right? So there's a requirement of mammon. Where does this come from? How do we know it? So we've seen already Techta from Shvua Pika, different deos in the Gemara, and then the Gemara says, my nafkamina, we talked about this already. But now, Rabbi Yossi Aglili came up with his own limud, one which is very consequential. Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer, another, again, amazing, inspirational, like, so how much is there in this one little pasuk, right? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili said, that little pasuk, you know, the pasuk of Shvuas Eidos says, V'hu eid, O ra, O yada. Right? So the limud is, Be'edus ha-miskayem es beriyah below yediyah, Ubi yediyah below re'iyah, Hakasa medaber. Since it says, V'hu eid, O ra, O yada, so the drasha is, that it has to be the kind of edus, the edus which is subject to Shvuas Eidos, is the edus, right, which could, in theory, take place, Biriya below Yadio, but Yadio below Riya. Which means what? Where there's a visual edus without context, without knowing what it is. We'll have to see what that means, but not for, that's on our first topic. Or, which is our next topic, Biyadia below Riya, meaning the kind of edus where you know what happened even though you didn't see it. What does that mean? How could you know something happened if you didn't see it? That's called circumstantial evidence. Right? It happens all the time. I didn't see it, but I know what happened here. Very easy to reconstruct, or seemingly easy to reconstruct. Oh. So the Gemara says, so what does the Gemara mean? Rabbi Yossi Aglili, what does he mean? What he means is that you need a Choshen Mishpat topic, the kind of topic that can be decided according to the standards of Eidos that allow for Yediyah below Re'iyah and Re'iyah below Yediyah, as opposed to personal status or Dina Nefashos, where you need Yediyah and Re'iyah. Okay, so that is, in a nutshell, you know, a very interesting formula. Meaning there are different standards of Eidos for different areas of Halacha, even when we require Eidos. Now remember, we know already, we've been dealing all year, you know, in one way back and forth, that there are different levels of proving things, right? There's nemanus, there are different types of nemanus, there's Eidos, there's Eid Echad, right? But this is the first time, you know, in this context at least, that we've heard that Eidos and Dine Mamanus, right, can be of an inferior standard, let's say, than Eidos in other areas. Legabe, something like Re'iyah below Yediyah, Yediyah below Re'iyah. Right. So we need to know how the Halacha perceives these categories. We'll start with Yediyah below Re'iyah. And then, and only then, can we assess, like, how significant is it that we're seemingly going to distinguish between Dini Mamnus and Dini Nefashos. Do we paskin like this? What is it all about? So the Gemara says, Amarle, Rapapa Labaya, Rapapa turned to Abaya, and he said to him, Lema Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the Rabbi Yossi Aglili who made this comment, and who obviously believes that Yediyah below Re'iyah works in Mamon, and not in other areas of Halacha, must be that Leisle Drab Acha, that he disputes the view of Rav Acha. Who is Rav Acha? What did he say? Netanya, Rav Acha Omer Gomel Ha'ocha Bin Agmalim. So you see this camel, it doesn't really matter, right? You know, this animal, this camel, and he is acting aggressively, we'll say, amongst, you know, other animals, right? Again, what his aggressive behavior is all about, you know, is a matter of debate. It's a little bit important, but not important at the moment. So this Gomel Ha'ocher Ben Agmalim, you know, this particular animal is acting very aggressively. And then you don't see what happens, but, you know, an hour later, you know, you return to the scene, and now it's a crime scene, you know. So, Venimsa Gomel Harug Betzido. So his, you know, colleague Gomel, right, is, you know, Nebuch, you know, no longer alive. Biadua Shazeh Harago. So Rav Acha says, listen, you know, we can connect the dots. Clearly, this aggressive Gomel, you know, victimized this more pacifistic, you know, politically, you know, correct Gomel, whatever it was. The E is Leid Rav Acha, because if we hold that Rav Acha is correct, namely, even though we didn't see it, we can charge for it, then Bedina Nefashos Nami Mishkachas La. Then we have a parallel in Dina Nefashos. And, you know, if we're going to reconstruct, I mean, we're going to rely on circumstantial evidence like this in Mamanus, maybe a very, you know, compelling circumstantial evidence in Dina Nefashos should work as well. For example, Krav Shim Ben Shatach. This is a famous, famous case of Shim Ben Shatach. Gemara quotes in Sanhedrin, the Tanya, Amar Shim Ben Shatach, Erev Ben Nechama, Im Lo Ra'isi, Echad Sheratzach HaChavero, right, L'Churva. So he sees this one fellow, you know, running after the other guy with, you know, into a, like a churva, you know, a ruins. You know, it's a place where there is nobody, and probably a place which is, you know, very isolated, and, you know, there aren't that many other forces or factors around, you know, to kind of confuse, you know, the reconstruction. The Ratz the Achra, right, you can almost like see the scene, you know. He's running after him. Umatzasi, Sayef Biyado, Adam Metaftev, right, he finds, you know, him, has, you know, standing over this other guy, who he was a minute earlier, or 10 minutes earlier, chasing and you know, probably, you know, elaborating and articulating, you know, his unhappiness or his intent, whatever it was, right? So he sees him with standing over him with a knife, a bloody sword, you know, dripping with blood. I'm not trying to be graphic, but I'm just trying to translate the Gemara. What can I do, right? V'harug mefarfer, and this guy, you know, is, you know, he's his wounds, let's say, are very visible. So Marti la Rasha, mi harago lazeh. So he, from Shim ben Shetach, turns to the guy, and he says to him, Rasha, who killed this, you know, this fellow? Oh, ani, oh, ata, we're the only guys in the churva, there's no one else around. So either you killed him or I killed him. Right? Avamaes, and I know that I didn't kill him, that's obviously the subtext. And the other guy knows that Shim ben Shetach didn't kill him either. Avamaes, what can I do? Shein dam chamas or biyadi. God knows I can't do anything about it. Shari Amr Torah. Torah says, Al Pishnai made him Shlosha Edim, Yumas Hameis. The Torah says, Al Pishnai Shlosha Edim, Yumas Hameis. You need two or three Edim. And this is not Edos. Ela Makom, Yifra Mimcha. Shimon Shetach says, Or Bona Shalom should, you know, exact retribution, you know, from you. Amru. And they say about this case, let lo zozo misham ad shenashcho nachash. So, you know, he got in the churba there was one rattlesnake, I guess, and you know he took care of him. Umeis, fine. So what the Gemara is saying is, if Gomel Ha'ocher Ben Agmalim is a mazik, and you think you have no problem with that, maybe with the umdana, with the circumstantial evidence, so then we can find a Dina Nefashos case that's compelling, maybe more compelling. And why wouldn't that work? In which case, there's no discrepancy between Dina Mamanus and Dina Nefashos. So where's the idea below Ria, you know, that signifies Mamanus and not Nefashos? That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, Afilu Tema de Islay Drabacha. right? Even if you hold like Rabacha, Bishlam Yediyah below Re'iyah Meshkachas, El Re'iyah below Yediyah Hechem Meshkachas Lo. So that, he says, listen, what Rabbi Yosef, what Rabbi Yagluli said, was the Yediyah below Re'iyah and Re'iyah below Yediyah works. You know, Hanami, Yediyah below Re'iyah might work in both, but only Dinim Amonis, you have Yediyah below Re'iyah and Re'iyah below Yediyah. I'll leave out the Re'iyah below Yediyah, what exactly it is for the moment. We'll get back to that. Okay, that is the Shakavataria of this Gemara. However, if you look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to distinguish between Mavinus and Nefashos. The truth is, it's a very strange Shaklavataria of our Gemara. I mean, the Gemara says Yediyah below Re'iyah applies only to Mavinus and Nefashos, right? The Gemara seems pretty satisfied, you know, with that concept, right? And then the Gemara says, well, how can it be true? That's against Rabbi Acha. Why is it against Rabbi Acha? Rabbi Acha said something about Niskei Mamon. He said something about Dinei Mamonis. The way the Gemara reads is very strange. The Gemara says, because it's against Rabbi Acha, because if you hold like Rabbi Acha, then you should hold the counterpart in Dinei Nefashos. And if you hold the counterpart in Dinei Nefashos, then you're not distinguishing between Mamon and Nefashos. And it's just a very strange argument, right? The Gemara should just say, you know, we do hold like Rav Acha, that's Dinei Mamonis, we don't hold like Dinei Nefashos, because that's Shimon Shetach, and you need real Eidos, right? So in Sanhedrin, that's kind of what the Gemara does say. If you look at Tosis here, Tosis says, Di Islei Rav Acha, B'dinei Nefashos, Nami Mishkachasla. Mash Mahachad Rav Acha, Islei Umdina B'dinei Nefashos. Right? The Gemara says it seems from here that you think that Rabbi Acha, who said something about Gomel HaOcher Ben HaGamalim, he said is a Dinei Mamonis case, it seems like you're presuming that he would agree that Hu Adin B'Dinei Nefashos. Right? V'tema, the Perek Echo Dinei Mamonis in Sanhedrin, where the same Gemara appears, Gabi Ketzim Aymen Al Dinei Nefashos. Ah, what's the context of the Gemara in Sanhedrin? The answer is the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Same Mishnah that we began practically the year with. You know, one of the things is they remember Ma Lanu Letzara Hazos, the Mishnah? The Mishnah says you threaten this guy, you know, and you should know if you tell false testimony, you know, you have this onish and that onish and the next onish. And then the Mishnah says, you know, so the guy's going to turn to at some point, he's going to say, Ma Lanu Letzara Hazos, what do I need this for? You know, I need all these nightmares, and maybe I'll make a mistake, and I'll go home. Thank you very much. Talmud Lomar v'huayit or roa yada, same pasuk. Right, that's the chiyuv agada appears in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. That's the same Mishnah. So anyway, the Mishnah says about dina nefashos, ketzim ma'ayin al dina nefashos. What is the iyum? What is the threatening that takes place? How does he warn him on dina nefashos? Shema tomru mu'umad re'isim. So one of the things the Mishnah says is, you know, maybe what you saw, you didn't actually see, maybe you're reconstructing based on circumstantial evidence, maybe it's an umdana, right? So the Gemara says, oh, you threatened the guy in Dina Nefashos, maybe it was an umdana, implying that if it was Dina Mamonis, it wouldn't be such a problem, it wouldn't be a problem. How about Dina Mamonis, I'm reading Kaman, Faminan, Keman, Krabacha. Who's a man damar thinks in a dini mamunas you can go basar umdana? Rabacha. Mashma, Tilo ay Rabacha, Bedini Nefashos. The whole point seems to be there the Gemara is quoting Rabacha to distinguish between mamunas and Nefashos. Here the Gemara is saying, if you really hold like Rabacha, you know, you should say, who Adin bin Nefashos? What's going on? So says Yeshomar, Devadai mi karad, so gadaita kolom bitukim karabanan, al karchak mukalot karabacha. Before the Gemara thought there what they thought in the end, so they figured they have to have a bandamar who aligns with the Mishnah. The Mishnah does seem to distinguish between Mamonis and Nefashos. So they said, oh, obviously Rav Acha, you know, is limited to Dine Mamonis. Avalafia Maskana, the Muki Krabanan, Matsalame Rav Acha Isleidumdana. Afilu b'dinei nefashos. Maybe Rav Acha's comment about dinei mamonis isn't only dinei mamonis, it's dinei nefashos as well. Okay. Fine. If you look at Tosfos in Sanhedrin and Rabbeinu Yonah, then the Rishonim in Sanhedrin and here all enter this question. It seems like a stira between two Gemaras, whether or not Rav Acha is consistent with the distinction of Rabbi Yosef Glili, or Rav Acha is inconsistent with all of that. So one of the things that's so interesting is that it ends up breaking down, among other things, partially, between in a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban in Sefer Mitzvos. Oh. So just to highlight that in our new Mar Makomos, thank you very much. The Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chaf, Halacha Aleph, says the following. I should have also quoted the Rambam in Iskei Mamon, where he quotes Rav Acha, but okay, maybe I'll get that for next week. Ein Bezdin Onshin Ba'omin Adas, says the Rambam. Bezdin does not enforce or implement Onshim Ba'omin Adas, right, based on their estimation, their assessment, right, their connecting the dots. Ela al pi eidim biraya brura, right? Only al pi eidim biraya brura. When you have clear edus, afilu ra'u eidim rodef achar chaveiro. This is shin ben shetach, right? Mm-hmm. Even if one guy saw the other fellow running after, the victim, bihisrubo, right? Ve'alimu einayim. And then, even if they even warned him, if you kill this guy, you should know, you're going to be tried and you're going to be convicted and so on and so forth. And then he lost sight of him for a minute. Exactly the language of the Gemara. Vasayef minatef dam biad hahoreg. The Rambam even calls him a horeg, right? Hoil v'lo ra'uhu b'eshe kohu ein bezin horgim b'enuzu. Like Shem ben Shattach said, you can't convict him, right? U'kiyotze bo nemar v'naki v'tzadik al tarog. Ooh. Doesn't say that in the Gemara. The pasuk of v'naki v'tzadik al tarog. Sounds like in Shem ben Shattach quotes al pi ha'ishnayim v'shoshenim yumas ha'meis. Right? What? Right. Right, because of the Beinu of Eidos.
Right.
That's the point. So it's interesting. So what? But what? I'm trying to make a point. The Gemara doesn't say Vinaki Vitzadik Al Taro. The Rambam says Vinaki Vitzadik Al Taro. What is Vinaki Vitzadik Al Taro, and when is it used? Only for Dine Nefashos. Oh, for standards that have to do that differentiate Dine Mamnus and Dine Nefashos. No, not Tafka Malka, but for the Shafto Eda Veitziloha Eda and Vinoki Vitzadik Altarog, both of those limudim differentiate the standards of Dini Mamanus and the standards of Dini Nefashos. For example, can you be Mezakeh? Can you be Mechayev after you were Mezakeh? Can you change your mind? Do you need a majority of one, or you need actually a majority of two, right? Who do you begin with in the Dayanim, right? All those kind of, there's a whole Mishnah in Sanhedrin about differences between Mamanus and Nefashos. We studied Sanhedrin a couple of years ago, we talked a lot, about this. So Rambam is invoking that Makar, the Naki Vitzadik Altarig, is one of those Makoros, to say this is a din which reflects the differences between Mamanus and Nefashos. Okay? The Gemara doesn't say it that way, is what I'm trying to say. Okay. Clearly indicating that the Rambam thinks that this is limited, this din, that Ein Onshin al pi edim b'ray el al pi edim b'ray brura, that edim b'umden, in other words, is a limitation in dina nefashos alone. That's clear in the Rambam. Okay. Well, because we never documented altar v'chein. If you wanted more proof, the next lines in the Rambam are 100% raya. Ime idu alef shnayim sh'avod avodah zara. two Edom come to court and they say he was over to Avodah Zarah. Okay? He did two different acts of Avodah Zarah, each one with a Hasra, each one by one aid. Okay? That's called Edus Miuchedes. Right? There are two types of Edus Miuchedes. There's, you know, Echon Michalon Zeh, Echon Michalon Zeh, with the Re'iyas Miuchedes, and there's another one where, you know, the actual, what we call Hava Achar Hava, let's say, right? Or two different actions. Shenemar, again, the Naki V'tzadik Altaruk. Hold the Yesham Tzad L'Nakoso, V'Lios Tzadik Altahar Guhu. Okay, we'll discuss what that means in a minute. And then the Rambam says in Halacha Beis, Kol Misha Asa Davar Shechem L'Misa, Misa Bezim Ones, Ein Bezim Amisun Oso, Af Bisho Yimutzuva Sheyarik Val. Yeah, okay, this, we'll leave this from what I'm going to get back to. I want Halacha Beis for a certain reason, but I'll get back to it in a minute. That's what the Rambam speaks about. You cannot be manish, someone who was an Onus, with the exception of the Gimel Averos, etc. Okay, fine. In Sefer Mitzvos, Reish Tzadi, there's a fascinating exchange between the Rambam and the Ramban on this issue of Eidus Umdana. Basically, the Rambam is of the opinion that we distinguish between Dine Mamadis and Dine Nefashos. And the Ramban argues, Ramban takes the view that Eidus Umdana doesn't work in either. But according to Rav Acha, in other words, Hu Adin Nefashos, and if we don't paskin like Shimon ben Shetach, then we don't paskin like Rav Acha either. That is the view of the Ramban. But then, along the way, the Ramban also makes some other interesting comments which put the Rambam in a greater illumination, in a way, what he really had in mind. Meaning, the Ramban uses it as an attack, but, you know, sometimes when people attack things, they kind of uncover, you know, what the other person really has in mind. Unintentionally, but that, you know, Kachi Darko Shel Torah, too. Hamitzah Reish Tzadi, he says, Hiranu Shalolachto Chagadarim, right, Be'omed Hadas, HaChazak. Even when we have a very strong umdana, we have to see what the exceptions are. There exceptions to this, because clearly in some cases, we rely on some umdanas, right? Hein Hein Ed Yichud, Hein Hein Ed Biyah, we'll have to talk about. Right? A few other things, right? You know, we sometimes assume, or at least go bus a rove on like invisible, you know, the reconstruction of how a person, you know, the forensics of what happened here, right? You know, there was a blow to his whatever part of the body, you know, and we assume that that's what killed him because, you know, in 99% of the cases, when this happens, that, you know, causes death. And it's not that coincidentally, you know, he had a hemorrhage that same second. I'm not making this up. This is, we look here very quickly at Tosis on Lamed Aleph and Amud Aleph. Right, Tosis. Yeah, exactly, Trefarig. Exactly. So look here at the bottom, Tosis says, where we left off. Where there are, you know, certain circumstances that we assume, you know, lead to injury or to death, and so on. So this is a big issue. Yeah. Right. So, right, you assume the person was healthy when he was hit, or maybe, how do you know, maybe had a pre-existing, you know, condition, and he was, you know, a walking trefa, exactly as some of you just indicated. So we do rely on some umdanas. I mentioned Heinid Icho and Heinid Ibiya. In other words, it seems clear from numerous Makoros, right, that when it comes to both, some people are Mechalik, There are some chulkim in some of these things, but the general impression of the Gemaras is both with regard to kiddushin, let's say, a kiddushei bia, right, or with regard to isur znus, you know, the negative side of it, that what the edim need to see in a kiyum in the case of the kiddushin, and for edei you know, znus in terms of onshim, is they don't need to see everything, right? They just need to see, you know, heinei neichud, heinei neibia, right? They need to see, you know, circumstantial evidence. So this is a question that I was going to try to copy, but for some reason the Bar Ilan doesn't seem to have tshuvos maimonios. I was surprised by that. But I'll take it up with the proper authorities. But the first tshuva of the in the back of the Rambam in the tshuvos maimonios in Ishus, it's really a tshuva of the Rambam Rutenberg. I can get it that way also. but I like the nusach of the maimonios one for a particular reason. Discusses this question, like if we believe the edus umdin doesn't work in dini nefashos, so how do you explain hein neichud? It's a famous tshuva of the Rajba, right? Where the Rajba was asked about a situation where a person was misyached with the woman, and no one saw what was happening, and the people, the Eidim Machore a pargod, heard that he was mekadesh with an esrog. I don't know if it was, you know, during Sukkot or not, but. Or maybe there's something about being Makadish with an Esrog, I don't know. But whatever it is, he's Makadish with an Esrog, and she agrees, and then she walks out of the room, you know, proudly carrying, you know, this Esrog. I wouldn't say she wasn't wearing it around her finger, but, you know, and the Rajba says, you know, that's no good, because the Edim didn't see anything, even though they heard, they heard him proposing, they didn't see him proposing, they heard him proposing. They saw them walking out, you know, esrog in tow. You know, he says that's an example of edus umdina. It doesn't work. That's an interesting question also, right? If umdina works in mamonas and it doesn't work in nefashos, what about ishus? What about ishus on the positive side and what about ishus on the negative side, right? So we'll talk about that a little bit also. It's a big, big topic. But so the question is, what's the difference between that and Hein hein edi yichud, hein hein edi bia. Right, kiddushei bia is kiddushei Torah. Yeah. And the Gemara seems to say very explicitly that it wouldn't be tsanua, obviously, you know, for them to be seeing more than they should be seeing. So we rely on the umdana of that. So, you know, why isn't that a violation of this whole principle? So that's one of the things that we have to talk about. And, you know, Nekev... you know, maybe hit him exactly where he had, you know, his brain, you know, aneurysm or hemorrhage or whatever it was. Therefore, it's not even visible to the autopsy, you know, because that's exactly the place. Is a koan. How do we know that that isn't what happened? Or that he's not wasn't a trefa? You know, I guess before he could do an autopsy, or they wouldn't let him do the autopsy, right? The tuche mesa. So whatever it is, we do sometimes rely on very, very strong umdanas. Why is that different than Shim ben Chetach? And why is that different than what we're talking about here? Okay. Anyways, the Rambam says in Sefer HaMitzvos, HaMitzvah Reish Sadi, ooh, I have to stop. He says, Yironu shelo lachtoch ha-gedarim ba-omid adas hechazak. That's why I mentioned this. Even if it's a strong umdana, the circumstantial evidence is very compelling, as it is in the Shim ben Chetach case. Vafil ha-yakorev ela-emes. You know, it's practically, you could practically label it as a fact, as a truth. Couldn't have happened any other way. Kamosha Adam Yudefeu, Sono Lahargo. Like, it's not like they're having a race competition. You know, he's screaming and yelling and he's waving his knife or his sword, telling him he's going to kill him, you know. And it's known. They've never been able to stay in the same room together. Right? It's like a gripping, docudrama or something. Right? right? And then the guy ends up, you know, they call the coroner, you know, the new detective, the forensic detective, Vuma Farfer, the Sona, you know, is clearly his wounds, the Sono Shaya wrote for Omadalav, Asakan Biado, Vishneim Anatfim Dam, or the Rambam adds for good measure, both of them are dripping blood, okay? Not just the sword, even. Hinei Zeharodev, Loyahagu Asanhedrin, Al Tzad Chitachageder, Ha'acher, Shein Sham Edem Edem Shero Ariga. Tzidia Balaria. Uba Azar B'Torah Hasa Emes Meharogze. The Torah tells you you can't kill him. Hu Amar Yisale. Same pasuk that he quotes in Sanhedrin. V'Naki V'Tzadik Al Taro Kilo Atzdik Rasha. Again, it doesn't appear that way in the Gemara. Ube Mechilta Amru Ra'u Rode Pachar Chamer Lahargo V'Histrubo V'Amrlo Yisraelu Ben Brisu. Right? Im Harakto So Tihareg. He gave him all these warnings. Then Limu Einayim, then they lost him for a second, right? They didn't see the actual moment of the killing. Says the Rambam, don't think this is peculiar, right? Don't be astonished about this. So interesting, this Rambam. Kedvarim ha'ef sharim mehem krove ha'ef sharut me'od. Umehem rechoke ha'ef sharut. Mehem emtsayim bein zelaza. When it comes to things that are uncertain, says the Rambam, there's a range. You know, that things that are very, very, you know, likely to have happened. You know, very compelling. You know, in between. And less so. I don't like the pshat here, this particular explanation. It ruins it a little bit for the Rambam, but I'll tell you what I think he means by it anyway. Ula afsher rochav gadol, ula afsher rather, rochav gadol ma'od. I think he's making a pragmatic point. Like, oh, we don't know where to draw the line, and therefore, low plug, you know, we shouldn't allow any afsherut. But I don't think that's really what he means here. I'll tell you probably next week when we finish this what I think he means. If we had allowed compelling circumstantial evidence, like the Shimon Shentach case, then we wouldn't know where to draw the line, and therefore we would be endangering, you know, convicting. I mean, it's very inspiring with the Rambam. It's like, you know, like the Bezen Katlonis comment in the Mishnah in Makos. Yeah. I mean, the halacha goes out of its way, you know, even sacrificing the deterrent and the justice and the efficiency, you know, in order to, you know, try to avoid any miscarriage, you know, of justice, any guilt for an innocent party. B'meshu Yoser Rako, you keep pushing the lines, you know, the people start, you know, pressuring you. You know, and you want to be a law and justice, you know, kind of a guy. So, you know, it gets the standards keep shifting. Gamkein ad shiichtecha gedarim v'yamisu anashim pa'amim b'ma'at omeid, with, you know, less than compelling reconstruction. Lifi dimin adayin amachshavto. V'chein sagar yitalet ha'pesach hazeh. Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shalom closed the door, right? V'amar shelo yichatech geder ha'onesh. Without any kind of imagination, no reconstruction, whatever that means. Is there room for any kind of circumstantial evidence in that? We'll have to see. Okay. So the end is you're going to pardon some avaryanim. Because chataknu hagedarim bedimyon, right? Uba omeid, hinei pa'amim narug naki yom echad. Right? You have two options, says the Rambam. A very fascinating Rambam, you know, legal theory. He says, you know, you have two choices, right? Either you're going to be hard on crime, you know, and maximize the deterrent, and you're going to have an occasional innocent person who's going to suffer and be collateral damage to that kind of policy, or you're going to take the more, you know, I guess conservative with a small c view, you know, that, you know, we're going to ensure that no innocent man ever, you know, is sacrificed to the system, even at the, you know, unhappy price of exonerating, or at least not executing justice, you know, in cases where clearly there's a guilty party, which is why Shimon Chetach was so upset. You know, he could invoke the Rabbeinu Shalom in the end, by Yerub ben Nechama, but, you know, he was upset. You know, it's hard to see a guilty man walk away, obviously. Ulischus elef chotim, says the Rambam, right? Yoser tov v'nichsaf meharog zakai echad yom echad. Right? Them is powerful words, for the Rambam. V'chein k'she'idu shnei edem alav v'shtei averos v'kol achas mehem din misa v'kol echad nishteim levado ro osa over Achas v'lor osa over acheres. Now comes fascinating. Ram says v'hu adin edus miuchedes, right? Where you have two edim, but each one saw a different action, albeit a different action that is each one of which is mechayev misa. Hine lo yehareg kigon shiyoyda leved echad shiwasa melecha b'shabes v'hisrabo v'asheni yod alu shiovan avarazara v'hisrabo ze lo yisakel amru Amaro haya echad meido over the chama veechad over the levana shomeni yistar for tamalor v'naki v'tzadik al tara. So the Ramban, very long Ramban, we're not going to read it because we're already over time, but this 2 points in the Ramban that we'll pick up with next time, and then I'll try to explain, I think, some of the things here. Number one, the Ramban says, I don't think that the Rambam is correct in distinguishing between Mamanus and Nefashos regarding Umdana, Lahalacha. I think that Umdana is rejected not only in Nefashos, but in Mamanus as well. A. B, says Ramban, why did the Rambam integrate the din of Edus Umdana and the din of Edus Miuchedes? On the surface, they're two completely different dinim. Edus Umdana is lacking in our knowledge of really, it's a reconstruction, but there's no visual evidence as to what took place. Edus Miuchedes, you have two edim who viewed capital crimes. Right? Just not the same capital crime. You could say Edus Miuchedes is better and or worse than Edus Umdana, but aren't they just different? Right? So I'll just leave you with this suggestion. So the Rav thought that the Rambam Shita is that Edus Umdana and Edus Miuchedes share something very important in common. And that is, what it reflects is that the Rambam's view is that the role of Edus is different in Mamanus and Nefashos. That in Dine Mamanus, the role of Edus is to be made on the Chiyuv HaGavra. That the person, in other words, that the fellow himself is guilty. And in Nefashos, you always need to be made on the Maisa Aveira. And in that, Edus Miuchedes and Edus Umdana really share the same idea. Edus Umdana, you really know, it's Yedia below Re'iya. Right? Begavra, you know this guy is a murderer. But you didn't see, there's no Edus on the murder. What they saw was enough for them to know he's a murderer. Although they didn't witness the act of the murder. And that's really true in Edus Miuchedes as well. You don't have two Edim on one act of Avodah Zarah. Or in the first case of the Rambam, in the last few lines that we read, right? One guy is made on Chilul Shabbos, the other guy is made on Avodah Zarah. One guy is made on Avodah Zarah to the Chama, and the other one's made on Avodah Zarah to the... There's no stira between them. We'll see Ramban thought the Rambam meant stira, but that's not what the Rambam means. They're both made that this Gavra is Roy Lemisa's Bezdin. Let's say in the Avodah Zarah case, it's even easier. They're both made, is it over to Avodah Zarah? But they're not made about the same Maisa Avodah Zarah. They're both made that he's an Avarya Nuschayv Misa for Shabbos, right, and Avodah Zarah. But they're not both made on Chil Shabbos or on the Ma'isa Avodah Zarah. That's what Umdana is too. Because at the end of the day in Umdana, right, we really know that he is a murderer. We just didn't see the murder. That's the difference between Dini Mamanas and Dini Rabashim. But I want to take it a step further in the Rambam next time to talk about Yichud and these other examples. When the Rambam says, or when we say that in Dini Mamanas, Yediya below Re'iya works, is that because we are expansive in how we understand Re'iya? Or is that because Yediya alone really is enough? That's what I want to speak about next time. What do we mean when we talk about circumstantial evidence being effective? Then we can understand better when it's not effective. So that's, we'll conclude next week. We'll try to finish off.